This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
The Jets open up the season on the road as they get set to take on the St. Louis Blues, a central division meeting between two teams that are expected to go head-to-head all year.
Back from the beginning of October, the first game of the season between the Jets and the Blues to the first game of the playoffs between the Jets and the Blues. That was Dennis Bayak with the intro. My name is Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview show here on TSN 1290. Joining me in studio on this Tuesday evening is my usual colleague Ezra Ginsberg, producer and on-air personality extraordinaire Sean Assor, also with you on this Tuesday night. 3 hours. It's an extra special show. 3 hours of content for you on this Tuesday evening as we get you set for the Jets and the Blues. That puck drop tomorrow, of course, will be in exactly 24 hours from now, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. We're going to take you deep into the Jets and the Blues, and we're going to cover all of the other playoff series as well. We want you to join in on the conversation. You can do so on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can do so via text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. The question that we want you to answer is what will be the deciding factor in the playoff series between the Jets and the Blues. Again, send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. Send us your text, 129090. Ezra Ginsberg, good evening. Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. Back from your trip?
Yes, back from a little quick vacation right before the start of the playoffs. Nice to feel rejuvenated.
And you have a nice little tan going.
Yeah, we spent, we were down south a little bit. Nice, on the water. We were able to get some nice sunny weather with us.
So, that a boy.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm ready to spend the indeterminate number of days under the fluorescent lights of Bell MTS Place and here in the TSN 1290 studios. Sean Assor, good to see you on this Tuesday night, sir.
Good to have the gang back together, fellas.
Yes.
It's always great.
It is. It's a little bit earlier than you guys were on last week, so good job on doing the late night yeoman's work shift as I was off gallivanting away. And it's just a coincidence that I sometimes am not there at the 10 o'clock shows.
Yeah.
Shawnee and I just pounded like 5 Red Bulls each, and we were good.
You drove hard to the hole. I understand that completely. Let's get started with the Jets and the Blues. We played it off the top there, that intro. The Jets won, obviously, their season opener.
We were in Dallas for that game.
Because
you remember, the Jets played Dallas on the road.
Yes.
The Blues game was also on the road.
Yes, but there was a Thursday night in St. Louis that opened the season, and then Saturday night in Dallas, a game that, of course, we were at. The Jets struggled against the Stars. That was so many games ago, but that was about 80 or so games ago. But that game against the Blues, the Jets did not struggle at all. They were actually quite good, as we've all has been well documented. They were quite good against the St. Louis Blues this season. But, and that's that big but that everyone's talking about, the caveat, the asterisk, that this is not the same St. Louis Blues team that the Jets succeeded against. They haven't seen them since middle of December, early December, and from January 1st on, the St. Louis Blues, the best team in the NHL.
Yeah, and speaking of us being in Dallas, you know, shout out to our good friend Hartsey. We were there for his bachelor party, but, getting back to the Blues, obviously, you know, Jordan Binnington completely changed the outlook of the Blues season, right? We all know what Binnington has done. You know, many people have him as a Calder Trophy finalist. Many have him winning the Calder Trophy. And, you know, you could make a strong argument that, you know, if Binnington played another 10, 15 games, he would be a Vezina Trophy finalist. So Binnington has been a key to the Blues' reversal of fortune. But another guy for me that has been key for their success is Tarasenko. I mean, you look at Tarasenko earlier in the season, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a former 40-goal scorer. You know, he scored 33 goals this year. But earlier in the season, if you remember, he went 10 games without scoring a goal. I mean, similar to Patrick Laine, I actually think, if you think about the parallels, you know, Tarasenko, goal scorer, he struggled, and not only did he go 10 straight games, later on in December, he went 7 games.
Well, you remember that
he was really struggling.
There was some chatter when the Blues were really going through their doldrums. There was some chatter that he might have even been available, or they might have been considering putting him on the trade block. Now, I mean, obviously it didn't come to that, and the St. Louis Blues, in fact, didn't really press the panic button at all, aside from changing the head coach from Mike Yeo to Craig Berube. But, you know, there was talk that the entire organization, the entire team might have to be torn down to some extent. They obviously stayed the course and paid off for doing so.
They have to be patting themselves on the back for that decision to not hit the panic button, because look where they are now. They were dead last in the NHL. Now they're, into the dance, into the postseason. And you guys talked about maybe a different looking St. Louis team that the Jets played back in those meetings earlier in the year. Well, how about a different looking Jets team that the St. Louis Blues are playing? It's a real interesting series because it's essentially two teams that haven't really played each other in this style that they're kind of locked in right now. I mean, the Jets struggling, the Blues flip the switch, playing probably arguably the best hockey across the entire NHL. Also, shout out to our friend Hartsey, his wedding night, Patrick Laine's 5-goal performance. So
long time ago, that was
all over this play.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Shawnee, you talk about, you know, how the Blues really turned it on after the Christmas break, and you know, everybody's talking about Jordan Binnington, and really we should be. I mean, Binnington has been a great story, right? 25-year-old rookie. I mean, kind of similar to Artemi Panarin, right? Like a late bloomer. And Binnington was a guy that had the good junior career, and he put up really good numbers in the American Hockey League, but he really has been one of the best goalies since the Christmas break, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at this Blues team and they've had all types of injuries, right? David Perron had that 13 game point streak going. He was injured. Jaden Schwartz got injured. Joel Edmondson. I mean,
Robbie Fabry
again, yeah. Right, Drew, in his first 3 years in the NHL, he's injured every year, right? So it's not like the Blues, you know, haven't dealt with adversity aside from, you know, having that bad start to the season and then Mike Yeo being fired. I mean, they've dealt with injuries. They've dealt with, as you mentioned, it almost looked like at one point, Doug Armstrong was going to blow this up, right?
Yeah.
Back in December, we were talking about, you know, a couple of months before the trade deadline, we're talking about, you know, the Blues possibly being sellers. But right now, a lot of people have the Blues as favorites in this series. Now,
not just people. The sharps in Vegas, the gambling experts have the Blues as the favorite right now in this series. Now, if you are betting on this series, if you are making a wager on this series,
I think it's a coin flip.
You are a braver individual than I am because you look at it from every which way and you say, what Jets team is going to show up? Because I'm pretty confident we know what St. Louis Blues team is going to show up because they've been steadily improving from January 1st on. There has not been any real slip in their play. This is the St. Louis Blues team. The question is, can the Winnipeg Jets find what made them so successful?
Don't say flip a switch.
I'm not going to say flip a switch.
But I wrote flip a switch in my notes like 7 times, and every time I was like crossed it. Yeah. I was like, oh,
is it just
that.
Me who's tired of hearing flip a switch? I mean, you heard Brian Little today out at the Iceplex talking about it, and it's like the regular season's over. Let's stop talking about flipping a switch, right? And it feels like we've been talking about flipping that switch for the last month here. Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's just find a different word.
Besides flip a switch, before it was Turtle Derby. Remember that it was a Turtle Derby in the Western Conference a number of months ago? That one drove me
Mario
crazy.
Mario Kart Derby.
Okay, a Mario Kart Derby if you want. but, you know, not even the Winnipeg Jets team of earlier this season. Because I think the Winnipeg Jets team of earlier this season was maybe getting better results than their performance on the ice. Can the Winnipeg Jets find the team that they were last year? Can they find the team that they were last year, after they acquired Paul Stastny from the St. Louis Blues, ironically? Yep. Can they find that team that did so well in the playoffs right up until the series against the Vegas Golden Knights? That's the Winnipeg Jets team that I think has to show up starting tomorrow night in order for this team to be as successful as they want to be.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Drew. And, you know, we're joking about, you know, how everyone's calling it flipping a switch. But the reality is the Jets were a 500 team over the last 3 months of the season, right? We know the numbers. Since early February, the Jets were actually under 500.
The Jets were one of the worst teams in the NHL, you know, really from the trade deadline on.
Well, they certainly didn't look like the team in the first half of the season. So they do have to find their game, and they're going to have to find their game early because really, if you think about it, it's paramount that you win the first two games of the series, right? Because if the Blues are able to steal one of those games, then you don't have home ice advantage. And you could say that about any series, but I think specifically when you talk about the Jets and how well they've played at home, they've also played really well on the road. That's
setting
probably
a franchise record for away victories this season with 22 wins on the road.
Right.
This year?
The home record hasn't been as good as it was last year. And of course, you know, when you have 15 less points than you did a year ago because they had 114 points last year. I mean, you're obviously going to lose some wins either at home or on the road, but I do think that the Jets can win some games on the road, but I really do think game one is very important. And you heard Paul Maurice joking about it, you know, today after practice that if the Jets don't win game one, maybe they're just going to not have game two. But, you know, this Jets team, I still like them in the series. And I know, Drew, we're going to get to our predictions next segment here, but
don't get ahead of yourself.
The Jets have shown us in little spurts here in the second half of the season that they can play that same type of game, right? We've seen it against Tampa Bay. We've seen it against Nashville.
We saw it against, we saw the two games against Nashville at home where they really dominated the Predators. We saw it, you know, that on that four game road trip, through the Eastern Conference where they dominated Carolina. They beat Columbus. They lost to Tampa Bay, but they didn't play too poorly. They lost to Washington in what was a pretty close game as well. I mean, you've seen it in spurts. You're right. But you haven't seen it really consistently at all for the, you know, through the season. And that to me is not concerning, but you mentioned game one or win, you know, if they have to win game one and they have to win game two at home. I'm less concerned if they were to lose game two. You know, if you lose game two and you split at home, whatever. You know, the St. Louis is a pretty good team. This is, most people think this is going to be a lengthy series. If you lose game one and you're a fragile team confidence-wise right now, and I know the Jets ended up getting home ice advantage for the first round.
Yeah, but just barely.
Just barely. And, right. You know, so I don't think their confidence level is high. So if you lose game one at home, then I think they really are going to play much tighter. And the Jets playing tight against the St. Louis Blues team that has been the best team in the league is not a good recipe for success.
Look at guys, and I want to get Shawnee in here because I'm talking way too much. But
yeah, everybody thinks that.
When you talk about this series, I mean, a lot of things have to come together for the Jets to win, but a lot of things have to come together for the Blues to win. I mean, Connor Hellebuck right now, I think, is playing probably his best hockey of the season. Sure, he's had some bad games, but you know, you look at how he was struggling back in February, right? He's really turned his season around. And you know,
Connor Hellebuck for his last 10 games, 6-3-1 record, a 2.36 goals against average, and a .930 save percentage.
Right, and those are the types of numbers you saw last year.
That's right. Connor Hellebuck that we saw in the regular season last year.
Right, and I said this, you know, on my piece on illegalcurve.com. We had our predictions up there, and you, by the way, were the only person that picked this series to end in less than six games. You had the Blues in five. I'm kind of giving it away here, but
you are.
Everybody had the Jets or the Blues in either six or seven games, right? So that shows you that most likely, you know, the series isn't going to go less than six or seven games. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, the goaltending, that's not as big of a concern for me. And you just mentioned the numbers because I think Hellebuck and Binnington, I think that's a very equal matchup. You give the experience edge to Hellebuck, but, you know, Binnington has been really impressive this year. And for me, it's really going to come down to the production of the top lines for each team. I mean, you look at Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, both had excellent seasons, right? But down the stretch, they struggled, especially at 5-on-5. You look at that top line of the St. Louis Blues. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly had a fantastic season. Tarasenko, you know, in the second half of the season, started to look like the old Tarasenko, right? So both teams have great top lines. And then as you go down the lineup, you'd give the advantage to the Jets, I think, because, you know, you have Kevin Hayes, Nick Ehlers, Patrick Laine. I think, you know, the Jets get the edge when it comes to the offense. But then when you look at that defense, it's a pretty good defense. And Colton Parayko is going to be healthy for game one. And Parayko has the second best plus minus on the team after O'Reilly. So everybody, you know, talks about Alex Pietrangelo all the time. But
Parayko is a key component.
Parayko
that
is an excellent defenseman.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the Blues have, you know, I think when you look at the two decors, you might even give a little bit of an edge to the Blues. But the big X factor here, guys, is Josh Morrissey coming back. And I don't care what anybody says. The Jets' record in the second half of the season, the amount of goals they gave up, the amount of shots they gave up, I just don't think you would have seen those types of numbers if Morrissey and Buff were healthy. So the health of Morrissey and how effective he's going to be able to be early on in the series, I think is going to be key. If Josh Morrissey is looking like, you know, the Morrissey that we saw in, you know, December and January, then, you know, the Jets have the best shutdown defenseman in the series.
Yeah, great points. And there's a few things, I mean, that to me, the Jets need to focus on. The first being discipline. The St. Louis Blues, after the trade deadline, owning the top power play in the league. So, you know, the Blues are going to try to goat the Jets into that physical style of game. You know, Jets are a big team. They can handle it. They can hang. But discipline is going to be huge because it's so demoralizing to continuously take penalties and to be punished by them, for them to be costly and to have them affect you on the scoreboard. So discipline key. My question mark, my X factor, how will Mark Scheifele outdo last year's playoff run? And can he relive up, you know, to the hype and the performance that he had last year?
Especially because Scheifele has not had a great second half of the season.
If he's putting that pressure on himself and it doesn't start to come early, I mean, he kind of picked things up midway through the Minnesota series last year, and that's when he started to roll. But you hope, you know, that doesn't compound. If he can't live up to that hype early, will Patrick Laine start to get on the score sheet? I mean, it's a team he's pretty confident going up against, and I just think it'll be a really, really fun battle down the middle. To both teams with some real good center depth. So that, to me, will be a lot of fun. But I also think the Josh Morrissey thing is huge. Not only will the Jets be better with him, but can... Do the Jets have the luxury of easing him into game action?
No.
Or they don't, right? He's going into the tornado that is the playoffs.
Well, you heard
right?
Paul Maurice, they sort of asked, you know, what the plan is for Josh Morrissey. And he said, you know, we're going to play him 30. And I mean, you know, he's a little bit tongue in cheek, but he's
pretty serious.
But he's pretty serious. You're not going to see Josh Morrissey play 17 minutes tomorrow night. You're going to see him be the workhorse the Jets need on the blue line. When we come back, much more on the Jets and the Blues, game one going tomorrow night, a game you can hear live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I want to be careful that you don't want, you know, so much exuberance that you're running out of your routes and out of your game. But it's a good thing, right? Like, you want it in your room. You want the enthusiasm of the crowd and the enthusiasm of the stage to be a big driver, because the emotions of playoffs are critical. It's what makes the game different. Systems don't change a whole heck of a lot. Well, nothing really changes. The game doesn't change, but the emotions of the game do, and that's what makes them fun to watch and fun to coach and fun to play.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the emotions and the extra intensity that comes with a playoff series. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at the Linden Market Dental Center, Dr. Les Rikus, and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Easy for me to say. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let's talk about the Jets forward lines entering tomorrow night's game one between the Jets and the Blues, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. You know, the Jets, these are unique lines.
Right.
That we really haven't seen together for any significant portion of time this season. Connor Scheifele-Wheeler, yeah, we've seen them together. That makes sense. Then that second line where you now have Matthew Perreault sort of being elevated into the lineup, playing with Ehlers and Hayes. And then that third line, which is, you know, just a bit bizarre to me. Brian Little back at center with Andrew Kopp and Patrick Laine. And, you know, maybe Kopp will take some draws, and I think Little will take some draws there, and those, you know, split those up depending on which side of the ice the face-off's on. And then the fourth line of Lowry, Jack Roslovic, and Par Lindholm, with, you know, Brandon Tanev being out of the lineup for game one. Haven't seen these lines for a significant period of time aside from the top line. Do you like how their Jets are lining up forward-wise right now against the St. Louis Blues team?
Yeah, it's hard to say, and you mentioned, you know, we've only seen one game
with
that third and fourth line, because as you mentioned, Connor Scheifele-Wheeler, we've seen that a lot over the last couple of years, and then obviously we've seen Ehlers and Hayes together, but not so much with Perreault. So
Perreault really, elevated where Laine, right, you think might have
right.
been.
And it's natural to think that Laine should be on that second line, because he has been for the majority of the season, but, you know, what I thought was going to happen is I thought you would see Lowry and Little stay together. As you mentioned, Little now centering that third line. I thought what Paul Maurice was going to do is put Adam Lowry with, keep Little on the wing, and then you have Kopp. So essentially, you know, the TLC line is back together, and then Brian Little's replacing Brandon Tanev on the TLC line, kind of like he has with Andrew Kopp, right? Because you've seen Tanev, Lowry, and Little now, you know, for the last month or so of the season, right? Since the Jets acquired Kevin Hayes. So a little bit longer than a month. But to get back to your original question, what you have now is a checking line of Adam Lowry, Par Lindholm, and Jack Roslovic, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why it's a bit of a mishmash, and, you know, we did talk about this quite a bit on Saturday's show, but, you know, it's important for this series because it's all about matchups, right, Drew? And when you talk about, you know, your top two lines, I mean, I think you would expect, I mean, it's tough to say right now, because when you talk about, you know, the Blues, their quote-unquote shutdown line now is Jaden Schwartz, Oscar Sundquist, and David Perron, but that's also a very talented offensive line. You could also say that it's Bozak, Patrick Maroon, and Robert Thomas, but that's not really a traditional shutdown line either.
You don't think of Tyler Bozak as a shutdown center.
No.
You
see, well, he's a good responsible defensive center, but Robert Thomas is an offensive player, and you know, Patrick Maroon is more of a power forward. These guys can play defense, but the point is, it's going to be really interesting to see how the two coaches match up these lines, because obviously each coach is game planning to shut down the other team's top two lines. But what I really think you have here with Kopp, Little, and Laine is you kind of have a little bit of a mixture of a scoring line and a checking line, because when you talk about Laine, I mean, we know that he's an offensive-minded player. He's a shoot-first type of player. Andrew Kopp is more of your kind of, you know, defensively responsible grinder. He can get in on the forecheck, and Brian Little, we know, can do both. Also a very good, responsible defensive player. So right now, based on a game, I wasn't that impressed. The game against the Coyotes, I didn't really think, you know, the third or fourth line was that impressive. I mean, Hayes, Ehlers, and Perreault was the most impressive line in that game. And then obviously Scheifele, Connor, and Wheeler had a really solid game. But when you're talking about, you know, these matchups, that's what it's all about to me, because I wouldn't fixate too much on, you know, Laine being on the third line. I think it's more so, you know, the combination of players. And that's why, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if at any point in the early part of this series, you know, you might see a guy like Matty Perreault switch with Patrick Laine, and you have Laine playing with Hayes and Ehlers. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, get too fascinated with these line combinations. The only line that I would be shocked if Maurice breaks up is Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler. And obviously, you know, Brandon Tanev's not going to play game one. He might play game two.
He was skating today.
He was skating. I mean, he's not out long term. So if he doesn't come back for game two or three, he'll be back for game four or five. I mean, it's an injury, but it's nothing that's, you know, going to prevent him from playing in the first round, right, Shawnee? So I think right now, you know, it's really interesting to see what's going to happen with the Jets' third line, because Little and Laine, you know, they've had varying degrees of success over the regular season. They've clicked at times, but then you saw Laine play with Hayes after he was acquired at the trade deadline. So, you know, right now, you're going to have that shutdown line with Lowry and Parr Lindholm, two really good defensive forwards. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they Paul Maurice tries to get that line out there against Ryan O'Reilly.
I think
because Lowry and O'Reilly are both really good faceoff guys.
I think what's so fascinating about the series, Sean, is that you have these two teams that are trying to, you know, match up and sort of play chess against one another with absolutely no video, no relevant video of how you've played against them. And sort of Paul Maurice spoke about that as well, as they haven't played each other since before, you know, before the new year. It's a completely different St. Louis Blues team in terms of performance. And so I think there is going to be more of a feeling out period in this game tomorrow, especially, and in this series in general, you know, as the two coaches begin to sort of understand one another and try and sort of figure out the matchups that they're going to really desire to get, especially when you have home ice and are able to get the last change and go with that.
And just even from an on-ice perspective, this hotshot young goaltender who's taken the league by storm has never played the Winnipeg Jets this season yet. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a feeling out process on the ice as well for a guy like a Jordan Binnington. And for me, I think as you said it best, I mean, as soon as Brandon Tanev's hand grows back, he's going right back into the lineup, and we hit number four on the blender, because these lines will be once again blended to make some tasty margaritas on the ice. I mean, as soon as Brandon Tanev is healthy, is TLC reunited?
Well, you know, that if I was the coach, they would be, but they have, even when they were both healthy, even when he's healthy, the Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp line wasn't playing together, which I always thought to be peculiar because they were so good together. And, you know, they haven't necessarily played as much together this year as they did last year, where they were almost just a fixture that Paul Maurice could throw out there and say, we're going to spend this shift in the opposition zone as a result of their effectiveness. So I would say yes, or I would think yes, but the answer, you know, I guess we'll obviously see when Tanev comes back, but it hasn't been the case. He hasn't put them together. He hasn't, you know, he's liked having Little and Kopp together for whatever reason. You know, really since, you know, the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks of the regular season, you haven't seen Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp playing together.
Right, and I think, Shawnee, we all would agree that the TLC line has been a really effective line for Paul Maurice and the Jets, but I think, you know, it's also safe to say that when Brandon Tanev comes back, there's a really good chance that you're going to see Brian Little go back to the wing, mm-hmm. and you're going to see Tanev, Lowry, and Little, and then obviously Parr Lindholm comes out of the lineup, and then you possibly have Laine go up to the second line, and then you're going to have Andrew Kopp, Matty Perreault, and Jack Roslovic on your fourth line. And to be honest with you, those are the ideal lines. And those are the lines that Paul Maurice had before Brandon Tanev was injured, mm-hmm. right? Parr Lindholm's only in the lineup because Tanev is injured. So I think it's safe to say that you are going to see Brian Little move to the wing when Brandon Tanev comes back. As far as the TLC line goes, I mean, I don't think you can have Brian Little on the fourth line. So if you don't have him on the wing of the third line, and you're not going to have him centering that second line, because Kevin Hayes is obviously centering that second line. But I think this is what I would say about the Jets and the Blues and any other team in the playoffs right now, because in a seven game series, if you're not producing offensively, and that's what it comes down to, guys, at the end of the day, it's all about scoring goals. And when you have players that are producing and you have players that aren't producing, like, let's say that Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor are really producing offensively for Paul Maurice in this series, let's say after, you know, two or three games, but he's not getting a lot out of Ehlers, Hayes, and Perreault. And, you know, it's possible that Ehlers, Hayes, and Perreault are, you know, putting some pucks behind Jordan Binnington. But then you would see Patrick Laine probably elevated, and you'd see Paul Maurice start to get the line blender out. And, you know, same thing goes for Craig Berube. I mean, Alex Steen right now, guys, is skating on the fourth line. Robert Thomas is up with Bozak and Maroon on that third line. We talked about that line earlier. But, you know, if Maroon, Bozak, and Thomas aren't producing offensively for Craig Berube, you know, maybe Alex Steen goes up. I mean, Alex Steen is a former first-line guy for the Blues. So
yeah,
when you're talking about, you know, these different line combinations, I mean, you are going to see players move around based on what's working for the coaches, right? So, I mean, the most obvious answer I would have for you, Drew, is, you know, we'll wait and see what happens here with the first game, but everything's going to depend on Brandon Tanev, because say whatever you want about Tanev. I mean, Tanev had 14 goals this year. So you're taking 14 goals out of your lineup, and without Tanev on that line with Adam Lowry and Brian Little, he's had to move things around, and, you know, he's decided to go with his strengths and, you know, play Little as that third line center. But I think we'd all agree when Tanev comes back, he's going to go right to that checking line with Adam Lowry, and most likely, I think, Little's going to be on the wing.
Sean, last word to you.
Brandon Tanev could not, even if Brandon Tanev doesn't score a goal this entire postseason, the game he plays is so valuable to the Jets, especially yes. in the playoffs, yep. the amount he hits, the fear he puts in the opposition. Invaluable.
It's a very straightforward game.
I agree with that 100%, Shawnee.
Paul Maurice sort of spoke about that last year, if you recall. Tanev was effective in that series, particularly against the Predators, saying, you know, it's such a, the playoffs are a straight line game, and that's what the Tanev's game. So it's just, he gets to play the same style that he plays in the regular season, as opposed to some players who are more, you know, let's call it artistic than they necessarily are in the regular season.
Drew, everybody's talking about Buff as the X factor, and he can absolutely be the X factor, but I look at Buff as one of the Jets' best defensemen, so I don't know, you know, whatever you want to, however you want to define X factor, but for me, Brandon Tanev, and if he's able to come back, and whether it's game two or game three, he can have a huge impact on the series for a lot of the reasons that Sean just said. I mean, he has the ability to be a tenacious forechecker, and he has the ability to give you goals from your bottom two lines, right? So, I mean, Tanev could absolutely be a huge key in the series.
Well, that was our illegal curve question of the day. What will be the deciding factor in the playoff series between the Jets and the Blues? We asked you to comment via Twitter at illegal curve or via text message. Send your text to 129090. Mikey McMikeface said the deciding factor will be which Jets team shows up for the playoffs. Our good buddy Rowdy from the Netherlands, who's now in Vancouver, I think, or in the BC, says
Kamloops
maybe. He says yep. It's going to be Winnipeg's ability to break out of its own zone, because that certainly has been a factor for the Jets, their inability to move the puck up to their talented forwards. And Dylan Gutowski says, can Jordan Binnington stand up to the playoff hype and maintain his form, and can Connor Hellebuyck continue to improve into the playoffs? He thinks it's going to come down to the goaltending battle, which is certainly a logical decision to come to, and a big question mark in this series as to the battle between Hellebuyck and Binnington.
Yeah, almost every series comes down to goaltending, some more so than others, but specifically this series, guys, where Jordan Binnington has no NHL playoff experience, whereas, you know, Connor Hellebuyck went to the West Final last year. So the goaltending battle, like most series, is going to be huge in this series.
And Yuri just chimed in on Twitter as well, says he thinks the Jets' puck management will be the deciding factor between the Jets and the Blues. When we come back, we'll give our predictions on the record. We were going to have Andy Strickland, Blues reporter, on. He's going to join us in a few extra minutes. He's keeping an eye on the draft lottery, which is happening right now. A lot going on the Tuesday night before the playoffs start.
Joe Sakic has a huge smile on his face,
well,
by the way.
Because Joe Sakic's team is in the playoffs, and they might very well get the first overall pick as well and win Jack Hughes in the NHL draft lottery. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Tuesday evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a playoff preview show here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Still to come on the program, Blues reporter Andy Strickland is going to join us. We'll also be joined by Eric DeHatchik of TheAthletic.com to preview the Western Conference. And then Kevin Allen, I sat down with him earlier today to talk about the Eastern Conference. You can get in on the conversation. You can do so on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Our text messages are being received at 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply, and we did ask the question, what do you think will be the ultimate factor, the deciding factor in the playoff series between the Jets and the Blues?
Yeah, and Drew, we should mention for those just tuning in here,
yeah,
we're 5 picks in now to the draft lottery. Actually, 6 picks into the draft lottery. Montreal has 15, Arizona 14, the Florida Panthers got the 13th overall pick,
yeah.
Minnesota got 12, Philly 11, and then Vancouver 10.
You buried the lead there, Ezzy, by listing those teams. You forgot to mention that the Chicago Blackhawks have moved up into the top 3 position. We don't know where.
Similar to the Jets in 2016.
Similar to the Jets, the Blackhawks have moved up into a top 3 position in the NHL draft lottery. So the Central Division just going to get a little bit harder.
Anaheim with 9.
If Colorado wins, then they're going to go, obviously, everyone expects them to take Jack Hughes, but maybe Chicago could be in that, getting one of those top selections as well for this draft lottery.
Oilers just got 8.
And we can all rejoice that the Edmonton Oilers did not get the top pick. The New York Rangers have also moved into the top 3 in the draft lottery. So the big winners so far in the NHL draft lottery tonight are the New York Rangers and the Chicago Blackhawks, and obviously we'll keep you up to date on what happens with that.
We're just waiting to see if there's a big loser tonight, and that would be the Ottawa Senators.
Well, yeah, they're already the loser. There's no doubt about that. There's no question about that. Predictions time, guys. We've talked about the Jets and the Blues series so far. It's just a fascinating series between two teams that haven't really seen each other. We know that the Blues are one of the upper echelon teams since January the 1st. The Jets were before then, but haven't been since then. The return to the Jets lineup of both Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey, two guys who haven't really played together for any significant basis or been in the lineup at the same time since really the end of December, right around Christmas. They came back and had about a 3 or 4 game period together. So I'll start with you, Mr. Ginsberg. Between the Jets and the Blues, how do you see the series shaking itself out?
Yeah, just quickly here again, I know we're not completely talking about the draft, but when you're talking about the number one overall pick right now, it's Colorado, Jersey.
No, Colorado just got picked.
Oh, sorry.
Colorado is going to draft 4th, so the Senators' pick will not go first overall.
Okay, so there you go. That was happening as I was speaking there. But
the top 3 is New Jersey, Chicago,
and the Rangers,
right, in some order. So at least from the Jets' perspective, 2 of those 3 top selections are going to stay in the Eastern Conference. Only the Blackhawks have improved to the point where they may be the team that gets Jack Hughes. Give me your prediction.
Wouldn't that be incredible if the Devils got 2 first overall picks in 3 years?
I don't know about incredible. I mean, you as a Devils fan have a big smile on your face.
I was going to say the smile on your face.
Yeah, I'm not sure anybody else.
Hughes would look nice in a Devils jersey, wouldn't he, boys?
Well, Taylor Hall is going to leave there after next season, so it doesn't matter anyways.
I don't know about that.
Give me your prediction.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the Jets in 6, and I realize that, a lot of people have this series going to 7 games. I mean, I still think the Jets are the better offensive team. I think home ice advantage in this series is going to be huge, and I really don't think that the Blues have the advantage in goal. I think Connor Hellebuck, has been playing his best hockey over the last couple of months, and I do think that, his experience in last year's playoffs is going to benefit him. So I'm taking the Jets in 6, and I think Jets fans can breathe easy because I do think we're going to see a rematch versus the Predators in the second round.
Sean Assor, give me your prediction.
I am going to say Jets in 7. I think it's going to take maybe a game or a game and a half for the Jets to find the speed and the tenacity that they tapped into last year in the playoffs. And I think that it will go the distance. I think it will go 7. I think home ice will play an advantage in this series. And I also think that if the Blues want to find success, they can look no further than to just limiting the Jets' speed and transition game. We saw it a few times throughout the season where specifically just comes to my mind the Montreal game and the game against Pittsburgh where the Jets' speed was neutralized. And I feel that if they can find that speed again and play at that pace that we're used to seeing them, I think they will take it the distance. And I think we will see a Jets win in 7.
2 well-reasoned arguments from you fine gentlemen. The way I evaluate this series, the way I look at this series is you have the two teams and on paper they're very evenly matched. And it could go 7 or it could go 6. It could be a toss-up. from my perspective, I've watched the Jets for the past 3 months. And sure, some people would say no Dustin Byfuglien to speak of, no Josh Morrissey for the last number of games. I don't think that this Jets team, you know, the cliche that you hated in the first segment, Ezzy, about flipping the switch. And it's a cliche, but there's truth to the cliche. I don't know that this Jets team...
There's a lot of cliches in hockey.
There's a lot of cliches in life.
Yeah.
I don't know that this Jets team...
That's a cliche.
...can flip this switch. I see so many red flags. Because even when they were succeeding earlier in the year, the numbers and the underlying numbers weren't outstanding. This wasn't the Jets team of last season. They didn't have the success of last season.
Are we going to get your pick here?
I'm explaining myself. And I look at what the St. Louis Blues have done, and I don't see why the Blues aren't going to continue doing that. And I don't know that the Jets can elevate their game and match what the Blues have been doing. And way back in September, when we saw the roster moves the Blues made this offseason, Ryan O'Reilly being acquired, Tyler Bozak, which I always thought was an underrated free agent signing, this St. Louis Blues team, I thought, was one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They've been playing that way since the beginning of January. I have the Blues winning in 5 games. And I know that's
bold.
It's bold, but there's too many concerns that I have regarding the Winnipeg Jets and their performance as of late to say that this team is going to be able to turn it right around. There you have it. Sean has
another well-worded explanation. I mean, yeah. Like nothing inaccurate there. And yeah, I mean, if you're looking at how they're going into the postseason, I mean, it would look like this Blues team should roll this Jets team in 5-6 games. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And it's a real, some really interesting narratives going into this one.
The Jets are getting a lot of credit for how they look on paper.
Mm-hmm.
From a lot of people who haven't necessarily watched them as closely in person or on the ice, because the way you watch them play on the ice, with the exception of a couple games against the Predators and a game against Carolina, there's a lot of warts in my mind.
I'll say this much, you know, I already made my pick. I'm taking the Jets in 6, but one thing that the Jets are going to have to do a much better job of is shot suppression and mm-hmm. directing more shots on net, because the Blues don't give up a lot of shots. The Jets give up a lot of shots, and the special teams are going to be really key. I mean, we all know the goaltending matchup between Hellebuck and Binnington is going to be huge, because Binnington has all of that momentum for the regular season, mm-hmm. and then Hellebuck has the playoff experience, even though it's not a lot, but he's got playoff experience.
Three series worth.
Right. Binnington has none.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the special teams, and I mentioned this on the site today, the Blues are top 10 in penalty kill, top 10 in power play. Now, it's 9th in power play, 10th in penalty kill, yeah. or 10th and 9th, whatever it is. And the Jets have really struggled on the penalty kill. We know that their power play, especially at home, I think their home power play is still 2nd in the league, if I'm not mistaken. So if the Jets are able to get that power play going in the first couple of games of this series, I think we're going to really know how this series is going to go, because if the Jets' power play is a little bit flat like it has been over the last couple of weeks, the Blues will probably end up winning the series.
Send us your predictions. You can do so via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can also do so via text message. We have one texter who sent in, if the motivated Jets team that beat Nashville 5-0 about a month ago shows up, they'll beat St. Louis. Otherwise, it'll be St. Louis in 5.
Update, Drew. Chicago just got the 3rd overall pick, so it's going to be the Devils or the Rangers who get that 1st overall pick and most likely take Jack Hughes.
And Jets fans will only see Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko twice a year, once in person and once on the road. Number 1 overall being announced by Bill Daly right now. Do it quickly, Bill. I'm about to go to break. No, we'll bring it to you when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Tuesday evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. Keep sending us your comments via Twitter @IllegalCurve. You can send us your texts to 1290.90 as well. Standard messaging rates do apply. Our IC radio question of the day: what will be the deciding factor in the playoff series between the Jets and the St. Louis Blues?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program St. Louis Blues reporter Andy Strickland. Andy, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Andy. Obviously getting ready for tomorrow night, game one between the Jets and the Blues, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Everyone's geeked up for what should be a great series between these two teams. And Andy, you know, we're asking our audience what the sort of the playoff X factor will be, the deciding factor in this series between these two teams. I'll ask you the same question. From your perspective, what needs to happen for the Jets to win the series and what needs to happen for the Blues to win the series?
Well, I think anytime you look at a playoff series, I mean, right away, you focus on the goaltending. And it's certainly going to be the case for St. Louis. I mean, Jordan Binnington, who's never been in this situation before. You know, obviously Connor Hellebuyck has a little bit of an edge from that standpoint, but you know, at the same time, Bennington's 25 years old. This is not the case of a 19, 20, 21 year old kid coming in there and, you know, being that uncomfortable. I mean, this guy's been a professional player for several years now. He's on the ice with guys that are his age. He truly believes that he belongs here. And if you watched him play over the course of the second half of the season, he's shown that he can handle the pressure, albeit playoff hockey is certainly at a different level. And I think in the case of Winnipeg, I mean, they're going to need their top players to certainly deliver offensively. No reason to expect that not to be the case. But, you know, for whatever reasons, the issues that plagued Winnipeg down the stretch, or at least the second half of the season, that led to them being not as successful as they were in their first half, they're going to have to correct those. And whether that's in the dressing room, or it's on the ice, or a combination of the two, they're certainly going to have to find a way to flip a switch and be the team that a lot of people expected them to be coming into the season.
Andy, Ryan O'Reilly is obviously the Blues' number one center, and he led the team in points with 77. That was a career high for him. But Oscar Sundqvist is a guy that really emerged as a go-to forward for Craig Berube. He was acquired in the Ryan Reeves trade that sent Reeves to Pittsburgh, and you know, he had 14 goals this year. He's not a guy that, you know, anybody's going to say is an offensive dynamo, but how important is Sundqvist going to be for the Blues in this series, regardless of who he ends up matching up against, but just to give, you know, the Blues that secondary option, secondary scoring option?
Well, I think it's a good question. And I mean, listen, there's a lot of factors that are going to play out here in the series. I know you guys asked me in the previous question, what are the main factors? But I mean, certainly, you know, getting scoring from your depth players is going to be huge, especially for the St. Louis Blues. They probably don't have as much firepower offensively, although you have a guy like Tarasenko and O'Reilly, and Perron's a very good player, Braden Schenn. These are guys that are good players, but maybe don't scream out star power outside of Tarasenko and O'Reilly maybe as much as some of the players do on Winnipeg. But Oscar Sundqvist is a guy who you'll see when you watch him up close, game in and game out. He's a big body. He's long, very responsible, both ends of the ice. He can make plays. He's probably a better passer than people realize as well. He's a big part of their penalty kill, so you know, he contributes and impacts the game, you know, from a special team standpoint, and he can finish. I mean, 14 goals. He's still a young player. He scored 20-plus in the American Hockey League before. Last season may have been an admiration. I mean, he calls it the worst year of hockey in his life, and you look back on it, and he was certainly a different player this year. I think he was maybe one of the most improved players in the entire league, not just for the St. Louis Blues, but across the board. When you look at, you know, him being now the second-line center entering the playoffs, where he was, you know, the fourth line center for most of the season, really until the last couple of months. So, you know, he's a guy who I think could surprise some people who haven't watched him play a whole lot.
Andy, looking at the roster, especially just considering the forwards, I look at a guy like Patrick Maroon, and maybe he maybe not have had the greatest regular season with just 28 points, 10 goals. I mean, this is a guy whose style of play is just can really earn some value in the postseason. I like to call it, you know, that style of play like a very playoff-friendly game.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with that. And, you know, Patrick Maroon has more playoff experience than people might realize. I mean, you go back to his days in Anaheim, you know, he played, you know, deep into the playoffs one year where he went to the Western Conference Final. They actually had a 3-2 series lead on Chicago, ended up losing the series, and Chicago went on to win the Stanley Cup. But if you look at Patrick Maroon's game down the stretch, playing with, you know, Tyler Bozak and Robert Thomas, who has star potential down the road, this guy has been one of the best players for the Blues down the stretch. In fact, he led all Blues players in scoring in the month of March. He led all rookies in the National Hockey League in scoring in the month of March. And you'll notice his passing ability, his playmaking ability, and just how much talent, raw ability that he has. And, you know, especially for a teenager who's, you know, who's getting his feet wet still in the National Hockey League, playing on the wing where his natural position is in the middle as a centerman. And he will be a centerman for this team for a long time moving forward. But right now they want to find him a role in the top nine, and that's where he fits in. But Patrick Maroon, his ability to hang on to pucks, his strength, I mean, you just can't get the puck from him. And you watch this line play, it seems like every single shift they're playing in the offensive end. And he just kind of sets up shop below the goal line, and he can create some plays and certainly can box out in front, create space for his line mates, and he's done that down the stretch here. You know, he's been the player down the stretch that they were hoping that he would be, and really that he's been much of his career from Anaheim and then on to, you know, Edmonton, where, you know, he scored some goals. I think he has close to 45 goals or so coming into this year over the course of the last two seasons combined. So he knows how to put the puck in the net, and he certainly is comfortable playing in an offensive role, plus he plays on the power play. So I think you're right. I mean, he could be a guy that certainly fits in with the playoff style, although, you know, sometimes we get lost and don't realize how fast the pace is in the playoffs as well. And that can be a difficult matchup for him when it's a fast game out there because that's not his strength. But hanging on to the puck, protecting it, and wearing down the opposing D-man, I think that's something that he's very good at, maybe a little bit underrated.
Andy Strickland is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show. Andy is a St. Louis Blues reporter talking about the Jets and the Blues game one tomorrow night, a game you can hear, of course, on TSN Radio 1290.
Andy, we know who the Blues' top defensemen are, obviously Alex Pietrangelo and Colton Parayko. He's healthy. He's going to be ready to go for game one. But I wanted to ask you about Jay Bouwmeester because he signed a one-year contract, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago. And we know that Bouwmeester is older now and he's maybe not the defenseman that he once was. But I guess two-part question on Bouwmeester for you. Were you surprised that the Blues signed Bouwmeester to that one-year contract now, or were you expecting that? And what kind of role do you think Bouwmeester is going to play in this series, especially if he goes up against that Jets second line?
Well, you may see him go up against the top line. I mean, he and Colton Parayko have teamed up down the stretch. Again, and I keep saying down the stretch, guys, because the Blues were a different team in the first half versus who they were in the second half. I mean, they had the second most wins in the entire league. From January 1st on, the only team that had more victories than the Blues were the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, I mean, it really is a tale of two seasons for the Blues. They fired their coach, and Craig Berube has made a huge impact on this roster. And a big part of it is Jay Bouwmeester, who wasn't healthy the first half of the season. He had off-season hip surgery and really struggled a little bit coming out of the gate. I mean, his game has always been predicated around his skating. And, you know, now he's moving the way that we're accustomed to seeing Jay Bouwmeester, you know, get around the ice, and he's defending at a high level. I mean, this is some of the best hockey I've ever seen him play. Wasn't surprised at him signing a one-year deal. They've been talking for quite some time. I guess the only question was, would it be a one-year contract or a two-year deal? But you knew there was mutual, there was mutual agreement for both sides that he wanted to come back, and they wanted to bring him back. And he's been excellent, guys, playing with Colton Parayko. He's got a role on the team. And he will have a huge role for this hockey club in this series going up against the Scheifele line. I wouldn't be surprised if we see that matchup. You got Vince Dunn playing with Alex Pietrangelo. They should get the majority of the offensive zone starts when you look at how those guys play. Dunn led all defensemen in game-winning goals down the stretch in the second half of the season. He had 9 goals in the second half of the season. Pietrangelo had 9 goals and 30 points. Both players among the league leaders in goal scoring. Both players in the top 6, top 8, something like that, in goal scoring since January 1st. So, you know, they're kind of your offensive pair, and now you see Parayko and Bouwmeester take on that role of being a shutdown defensive player, playing against the top players every single night, and they've had a ton of success since January 1st.
Andy Strickland covers the St. Louis Blues as a Blues reporter on their television broadcasts. Andy, appreciate your time this evening. It's going to be a fun series starting tomorrow night. Look forward to seeing you.
I can't wait. Anytime, guys. You guys take care.
You take care. Thanks very much, Andy. When we come back, we preview the remainder of the Western Conference playoff series. Eric DeHatchik, our good friend of TheAthletic.com, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Welcome back to our playoff preview show. We spent the first hour talking about the Jets and the Blues. That series gets underway tomorrow night. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. You can reach us in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can do so via text message as well. Send your text to 129090. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, it will not be one of our preview shows unless we speak with Eric Dehatchik. Eric, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Just watched the draft lottery, and I felt so bad for Joe Sakic. Honestly, I've known Joe through his entire career, and they just every year have the worst luck. And I honestly think that like everybody's been talking about how Edmonton is lucky, lucky, lucky. But New Jersey's the new Edmonton. You know, suddenly they've got all the luck, and I think that. I honestly think that there should be a way of sharing the wealth because, the notion that New Jersey now is going to be able to draft first overall twice after Edmonton drafted first overall, 72 times in a row or whatever it was? I can't remember. But anyway, so felt bad for Joe. Felt a little bit bad for Luke Robitaille, too, because I think that that Kings organization really needed a boost of premium talent. And one of those top two kids would have made a difference there because that's a franchise that that is going to go through some tough rebuilding, and dropping three places in the draft lottery is not going to help.
It's certainly not going to help, but they can look to the Vancouver Canucks maybe as a salvation, as the Canucks got Elias Pettersson fifth overall, right?
Well, I think that that's probably what they're counting on, and and as we all know, there's no guarantee that having the first overall pick, will necessarily translate into playoff success. Yeah. I mean, if you look at these so-called generational players that have come into the league the last couple of years, Connor McDavid has been absolutely everything that he's been billed to be, but the Oilers continue to miss. And, same with Jack Eichel. Individually he's doing a great job for Buffalo, but that is a franchise that is floundering. But, that's the lesson, of course, of hockey. It is a team sport. And, even when you look at these playoffs, which I know is what we're going to talk about, often it is the teams that are better than the sum of the individual parts that have some success. And I think this year was certainly a case in point of that.
Yes, enough about the teams that missed the playoffs. It's about the teams that made the playoffs. And of course, Eric, we're going to start with the playoff series here in Winnipeg, the Jets and the Blues. One of the most fascinating first round series, given that the Blues have been one of the best teams in the league since January 1st, and the Jets have been decidedly average in that same time period. From your perspective, you follow the Jets certainly, but you're in Calgary, so you maybe get a little bit of perspective being a little bit further away. How do you see that first round series between the Jets and the Blues shaking out?
Well, and I'll say this just about the Central Division in general. Like when I was asked, I've been in a couple of fantasy hockey pools, sort of the celebrity advisor. And when we started talking about the Central Division, I said, I'm giving each one of those four teams a 25% chance of advancing. I said, I think they have an equal opportunity, and both are coin flip series. And basically, I know you want to talk about the series individually, and we can I'll get to that in a minute. But to me, you have two teams, Dallas and St. Louis, that are playing better, and you have two teams, Winnipeg and Nashville, that have the better pedigree and I think the better personnel. So what happens? I mean, last year, Vegas wasn't great down the stretch, after all of the miracle stuff, and I saw them on the last night of the season, and they looked horrible. And from the Saturday night when the season ended until the day the playoffs started, the switch flipped, and they were really good, and nothing kind of stopped them until they got to the Stanley Cup final. So I think the Winnipeg Jets are capable of doing that. I mean, we can talk about specifics. Everybody in your market knows that without Josh Morrissey and, prior to Dustin Byfuglien returning, a handful of games ago, I mean, they were missing two elite players, two of their top minute munchers, and guys that are difference makers. And when you take those guys out of the lineup and you have to push players up playing in roles that they're not used to and guys that will be in the press box on opening night, it changes the dynamic of the team. So these guys are really good players, and that to me is what makes Winnipeg such a mystery team, because if Josh Morrissey can hit the ice on the first night and be as effective as he is, or even if he gets a couple of games to get his legs under his belt. And it seemed to me that that Byfuglien gradually, incrementally was starting to to get to where he needs to be. So it changes the whole dynamic. Winnipeg, you're right, they weren't that great, and there were nights when I didn't love some of the goals that Connor Hellebuyck was giving up, but I like their team on paper. So how long do you have to get it together, to get to where what looks good on paper translates into being on the ice? Because the problem, of course, with the playoffs is you lose four games and you're out. And St. Louis has a ton of confidence right now, and they have a rookie goaltender that has been outstanding. Any general manager in the National Hockey League will tell you that, you know, that the pace of play and the intensity and the scrutiny and the pressure changes from game 82 of the regular season to game 1 of the playoffs. So how does St. Louis react to that? And I don't have a good answer for you. I mean, I'm picking Winnipeg, but that's largely because of, you know, like a, sort of this Canadian bias. Like, I just have a feeling that one of those two teams in the West, Winnipeg or Calgary, is going to get to the Western Conference Finals. So, you know, I'm certainly not, you know, predicting them to go out in the first round, but I can't say that with any definitiveness. If you had asked me about, you know, Tampa and Columbus, I think I could, you know, come out with a more forceful prediction. But honestly, it looks close. It looks tight. It looks interesting. I think it'll be a fun series for you guys to cover. But, you know, I'm picking Winnipeg, but not with any great conviction other than, you know, that I know them a little bit better, I guess. So,
Eric, you mentioned the Nashville-Dallas series in your answer there. And, you know, a lot of people have Nashville as a heavy favorite, maybe just because Dallas just doesn't score a lot of goals. But for you, can Dallas win this series without Ben Bishop stealing two or three games? Or can they win the series if they're able to score some more goals and, you know, players like Jamie Benn and Matt Zuccarello are able to, you know, crank up their offensive game?
Yeah, well, you see, you're right. You know, Dallas has had trouble scoring goals, but Nashville hasn't been great either. Now, I know the general manager there, David Poile, really well. We go back 40 years. And, I think the one thing that he's been waiting for all season is to see, you know, like what kind of a team he has. I mean, when he made those deals at the trading deadline, like, you know, that's a message to his team that he is going all in. So, again, you know, I always, you know, reference what a team looks like on paper and then how it translates on the ice. Wayne Simmons has been okay. You know, Kyle Turris, since he's come back from the injury, has been okay, but they haven't been great. You know, the only player among their forwards that I really like the way he's playing is Arvidsson. I think he's been unbelievable, and, you know, he's one of those darting guys that finds the seam and can score goals in close. You know, I like him as a player, and I think he's one of the most underrated players in the league, but I haven't loved Forsberg since he's come back from the injury. Johansson has been just okay. So yeah, their model is, you know, those four elite defensemen. You know, Pekka has to be, you know, on top of his game. You know, everything looks good when you do depth charts, and then you watch them play 60 minutes of hockey and something seems to be missing. So I do think that Dallas can beat them. And in fact, again, you know, I'm in all these fantasy pools and, you know, suddenly I ended up with, you know, a whole lot of Dallas players on a whole lot of teams. And it's largely because I think a lot of people are looking past Dallas. You know, I would say the case that I would make for Dallas is that when Ben Bishop has been healthy this year, he has been an elite level goaltender. And so a lot of times when Nashville goes into a series, you know, you look at Pekka Rinne, and often you would give the goaltending edge to Nashville. In this particular case, based on an uneven kind of a season from Rinne and a very good season, I think, from Bishop, I think he has a chance to be a trophy finalist. I give the edge to Dallas. I think Bishop could, you know, get a couple of shutouts. I think he could limit them to under two goals a game. So then the question becomes, you know, Ben Sagan, I think the most important guy there is Radulov. I love his game this year. You know, he's been one of those guys that, you know, his stats don't look as impressive because he missed a lot of games. But, you know, after he returned to the lineup, he's been excellent. And, you know, the wild card there, too, is that the whole point of going after Matt Zuccarello at the trade deadline was that they felt that this was a guy that could come in and give them more than what the big three have been giving them. And, you know, he ended up having a great opening game. Then he got hurt. He's back playing right now. So I think that they're counting on Matt Zuccarello being a difference maker in this series. And so, you know, a lot of people don't know Rupe Hintz. He's been a real good player for them. So I think possibly, you know, they'll have enough scoring just because it's going to be a lot of 2-1s rather than a lot of 3-2 and 4-3 games in that series.
Eric Dehatchik is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show here on TSN Radio 1290. Eric has already given us his thoughts on the Jets and the Blues. Game 1 of that series goes tomorrow night here in Winnipeg, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Eric, I want to ask you about the Calgary Flames, specifically one forward in particular. Is there anyone in the postseason right now who's happier to have their stat line wiped to 0-0-0 than James Neal? And I think a word you used in your article in The Athletic, salvage a less than memorable season, I think that was a perfect word. Is there anyone maybe looking forward to, you know, flip the reset button than James Neal entering the postseason?
Well, your assessment is absolutely correct, and I did have a long conversation with him. Mm-hmm. But let me first give you a little bit of background. So last year, I did three rounds of Vegas. And so I said to, you know, the general manager in Calgary, Brad Tree Living, I spoke to James Neal more than any other player in the league last year, except for Mark Giordano, because I'm based here in Calgary. So I kind of got to know him a little bit and really liked him and really liked the signing. Like, he's a guy that's old school and edgy and plays with a chip on his shoulder and doesn't mind, you know, speaking out in the dressing room. And sometimes that, you know, ruffles feathers, but just sort of, there's a package there that it's not just an elite goal scorer, but there's a guy that wants to win and burns to win. And so, you know, that was one of the reasons they went out and signed him. I mean, if you look at the group here, you know, James Neal has played 100 games in the NHL playoffs, and Michael Frolik, the ex-Jet, has played 42, and then everyone else has played a lot fewer. So I think that they are really looking at both of those guys, Neal and Frolik, to, when the puck drops on Thursday night against Colorado, to say the right words and set the right tone. And so you're right. You know, and James said to me, and I think he's been saying it to a number of other reporters too, that, you know, it hasn't gone the way he wanted this season, and there's been injuries, and he's got hit in the mouth with, yeah. I mean, he's in China, and he and Mike Smith are going through a market buying those fur hats, and the one that he bought had a hornet's nest in it. He showed the picture to me, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, that has been a star-crossed year from the get-go. I mean, everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
That's terrifying.
Even shopping in markets in Beijing. So yes, he does want this playoffs to give him a chance to redeem the season. That'll be interesting to see, because he's going to start on the third line with Jankowski, and it looks as if Sam Bennett is going to be able to play on opening night. But a lot of people here, and I subscribe to this belief too, that, you know, Colorado has an elite first line, Calgary has an elite first line, and often in the playoffs, if you have lines like that, and I don't think they're necessarily going to play against each other, because Calgary's going to want a match back end up against McKinnon, but if the production from those lines is about even, if it saws off, then I think Calgary's 4-12 forwards are far superior to Colorado's 4-12 forwards. So, you know, to me, you know, as much as Neal wants to play in the playoffs, as important as Frolik's leadership is going to be, if I look at those 12 forwards, the most important guy is Michael Backlund. You know, and he's one of those guys, every team has him, you know, sort of an under-the-radar guy. It's like, he doesn't get a lot of points. How good is he? But, you know, he's close to 50 points every year, plays, you know, head-to-head against usually all the elite centers. If you look at his possession numbers against those elite centers, they're very good. Like, he's a really underrated player. And I think in this particular series, you know, so much of what drives Colorado, and especially this has driven this playoff push, has been the play of Nathan McKinnon. So it will be up to Backlund to minimize the effectiveness of McKinnon. If he can do that, then I think that in all the other aspects at the position players, Calgary has a distinct edge. Now, we can talk about goaltending if you want, because that's all everybody in Calgary is talking about.
Eric Dachik of The Athletic is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show. Eric, a couple more questions for you. The final Western Conference series is really one of the most fascinating ones, and you can make an argument either way between Vegas and San Jose. The question I have for you, Martin Jones has certainly not had a good year. I mean, he's been average at best for the San Jose Sharks. To you, do you think that he can turn it around and end up being a difference maker for the Sharks, or do you think that's going to end up being the Achilles heel in that series?
Well, so I was on that series last year when Vegas played San Jose, saw all the games, and I thought Jones was okay, but obviously a big difference was that Marc-Andre Fleury outplayed him. And so I think that, yes, everybody from the outside that's looking at that series is saying that, you know, when you analyze it, you know, Vegas has this distinct edge in goal. I picked San Jose in the series, and I think that Jones will give them good enough goaltending, but I think people are really underrating San Jose. You know, to me, when they have all hands on deck, and, you know, obviously they stumbled down the stretch. They didn't have Pavelski there. Carlson was, you know, taking as much time as he could to heal. I don't think he's 100% healthy, but I think he is healthier and healthy enough to play. You know, they're top three defensemen are elite. Their top nine forwards are excellent. Gus Nyquist, I think, was starting to finally, develop some chemistry there with Evander Kane in the end. I look at those teams on paper, and as much as I like the addition of Mark Stone to Vegas, I just think San Jose is better. They're really scratching Jonas Donskoy for the opening night, and that's a pretty good player to not have in your top 12 forwards because he can't make the cut in that group. So I just think that San Jose is going to outscore them, and I have a little bit of concern about Fleury's health. I know he played the last two games. He didn't look great in those last two games. To me, he doesn't look healthy. Now, that's not to say that, 5 days off, doesn't get him right to that point where he needs to be, and, he's, revving on all cylinders when he gets to the playoffs, and the injury becomes like a blessing in disguise because it gives him some rest, and, he's an older guy, and he played an awful lot of hockey until he got hurt. I think he and Hellebuck were close to, the league leaders in terms of minutes played. So, a tough series to pick, but, I'm looking at my colleagues at the Athletic. I think a lot of people are picking Vegas in this series, so I'm going to sort of take the counterintuitive point, and I'm going to take San Jose.
Last question for you, Eric, and it's the one that I'm sure you know that's coming and the one that you know you're dreading. But in our defense, you've already actually given your prediction as to who you think is going to win the Stanley Cup, and you see the Boston Bruins. So I'll let you articulate on that and tell us who you think they're going to play in the Western Conference.
Well, okay, so you're referencing the story that I wrote on the website today. Well, my argument there was that I picked Boston at the start of the season, and they tied with Calgary for the second best record in the National Hockey League, and so if Tampa stumbles or trips at all, I think Boston is a team that could slide in there and win them. I think Tampa will be Columbus. I think Boston will be Toronto. And I think the Tampa-Boston will be an outstanding epic mm-hmm. series. I think Boston could beat them. I mean, I have a story going tomorrow. Pretty interesting, actually, because what I did was, how down the stretch everybody was talking about Tampa chasing that the Detroit Red Wings team that won 62 games? Well, obviously that team didn't win the Stanley Cup. And the coach of that team was Scotty Bowman, who was also the coach of the Penguins in 93 that had like 119 points and were like the odds-on favorite, and they didn't win the Stanley Cup. And then he coached a Detroit team in 2006 that had 124 points and was the overwhelming favorite to win that year. And so Scotty won 14 Stanley Cups, but in 3 years he had a team that was like Tampa, monstrously ahead of everyone else, and didn't win. So I called him, and we talked a little bit about the factors that go into the anatomy of a playoff upset. And he talked about goaltending matchups, and it's a pretty interesting thing. It's going to be posted on the website tomorrow. But you can make the case, it's just easy to hand the keys to Tampa. They are the best team. But the best team doesn't always win. And, the playoffs are a marathon, and, your goalie can get hurt in the second game, or, the goalie matchup, Bobrovsky against Vasilevsky, the older Russian against the younger Russian. Bobrovsky has so much to prove. He's going to be a UFA. He's going to go to Florida when the season is and he's got like a 5-14 playoff record. So, if he has any kind of a playoff at all, the dollars on that contract will go up. So lots of motivation there. Lots can happen. I mean, that's why we're going to be tuning in starting tomorrow night, right? So mm-hmm. anyway, so I'm picking Boston more as a hunch and, to try and play devil's advocate as much as anything else. And then, I'll take Calgary coming out of the West because they have the best record. And I know people here are concerned about the goaltending. I'm of the belief that Mike Smith will start the first game, but they will use a platoon through these playoffs because that has worked for them in the regular season. And I always think that anybody that veers off a script that works in the regular season and tries to do something different in the playoffs, that's a recipe for disaster. So we'll see. We'll see if their goaltending is good enough. We'll see if all these guys that have been healthy in the regular season can stay healthy in the playoffs. But as we talk about every year, the first round is the best round. So let's drop the puck and get going.
I agree with you there. Eric DeHatchik, our good friend. You can read his work at theathletic.com. Eric, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Eric. When we come back, more on the playoff series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview special on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
I think Nashville, again, it's very similar to Winnipeg. They got the home ice, but they still have to solidify their game. They haven't been good down the stretch. And their power play, which was worst in the league.
Seriously.
In a series that's going to...
How does that happen?
Offense is going to be tough for Nashville. Dallas is very good defensively. Ben Bishop's had a great year. Maybe the power play can be a difference because it wasn't all year long. And Victor Arvidsson, the man who makes Nashville goal, will be key.
Mike Johnson, Dave Reed with some analysis of the Predators and Dallas Stars series. That's the other Central Division matchup, obviously, in the first round of the playoffs. Another interesting series between two teams that don't score a lot. The Dallas Stars have been tremendously stingy all season long. You know, the Predators have had success against the Stars this year, not an overwhelming amount of success. The Predators went 3-2 over Dallas. Dallas was 2-1-2, so all of those games obviously went into overtime, or at least two of those games went into overtime. So it's another close series between the Dallas Stars and the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Drew. And, you know, I like the Predators in the series, and I'll give my prediction a little bit later, but I don't think this is going to be a short series. Wouldn't be shocked if this series went to seven games. And, you know, we know that the Stars just haven't been getting that secondary scoring all year long, but in their a great defensive team, and that's what matters at this point. And I think Jim Montgomery is not getting enough credit for how good of a first season he's had, really, with the Stars team. Because, you know, you guys, you think about, you know, the first half of the season, the Stars were not firing on all cylinders. And obviously, you know, Tyler Seguin leads this offense, but Jamie Benn has not had a great offensive year. Alex Radulov has done exactly what you expect out of him. And I mean, Jason Spezza hasn't had a good year. I mean,
Spezza's at the end of his career.
Well, you look at the Stars, and, you know, if you look at their top six scoring, three of their top six scorers are defensemen. And Esa Lindell is a guy that, you know, has quietly put together, I think he's at 11 goals or 12 goals. I mean, he's had a really good offensive season. We know what to expect out of John Klingberg. He's been one of the best offensive defensemen for 3 or 4 years now. But Miro Heiskanen had a great rookie year, Drew, but it's all about Ben Bishop. And I agree with what Eric Duhatchik said. Also, just a great interview. Always fantastic when we have Eric D on the show. But, you know, Ben Bishop has to be, at the very least, a Vezina Trophy finalist, if not the favorite right now. Because if you watch the Stars team, when he's been healthy, when he's been in the net, he has been fantastic. Basically, with the exception of Andre Vasilevsky, I don't really think there's that many goalies in the conversation. So obviously, you know, if Bishop's able to steal, you know, a couple of games,
his health is the big question.
Right. Mm. But I just think the Nashville Predators are going to be too much to handle for the Stars, not offensively, but just the suffocating style that they play, guys. And, you know, even though the Predators won the Central Division, it seems like everybody is taking them lightly this year just because they won the President's Trophy last year. And, you know, they were, you know, 17 points lower than they were last year. So I think in a certain respect, the Predators aren't getting the respect they deserve. And yes, I realize Kyle Turris has struggled all year on that second line, but we talked about it. Victor Arvidsson, you know, if he was healthy all year, he would have easily scored 40 goals. You know, Ryan Johansson is an excellent number one center. We know that the Predators are still one of the best defensive teams in the league. Another guy to watch out for, Drew, a guy that hasn't been talked about a lot, is Dante Fabro, a former first-round pick of the Predators. He's been playing on that third pair. He just signed after completing his college career. Mm-hmm. So Dante Fabro is a really good young puck-moving defenseman on their third D pair there.
How many puck-moving defensemen can one team have? That's what all the Predators have, is puck-moving defensemen, which is a testament to their scouting staff, certainly. You know, the NHL obviously has to be happy that the Stars and the Predators are playing in the playoffs, given that they're going to be the Winter Classic game at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, so maybe get that rivalry heated up a little bit. Sean, your prediction, a thought on the series, and your prediction before I get it back to Ezzy.
Quick thought, something popped in my head as we were talking about goaltending. It's really interesting, actually. Ben Bishop lost his only start versus the Dallas Stars this year, a 5-4 overtime loss. It was Anton Hudobin who earned a couple wins for Dallas. And Pekka Rinne was 1-2 versus Dallas. It was actually UC Saros who went 2-0 again. So it's
Don't be surprised if you see some of the backup goaltenders in this series. I mean,
this is going to be one of the best first-round series. I think a lot of people are focusing on the Jets and the Blues, and a lot of people are focusing on the Golden Knights and the Sharks. But, Shawnee, here, let's get your prediction here.
I got Preds in seven, but I also think that you're going to see a somewhat nastiness to the Dallas Stars game based on the abhorred power play, maybe, of the Nashville Predators. Maybe you think increase the physicality. They can't burn they're not feeling great about their power play. Maybe we take a couple extra liberties here and there because we may not get punished on the penalty kill. But for me, also with regards to Dallas, I do have the Preds taking it in seven. But quickly, how will Miro Heiskanen play in his first NHL postseason. I mean, this guy has been relied on heavily as a rookie D-man for Dallas, and it'll be interesting. Like, just we talk about Jordan Binnington and the unknowns of the NHL playoffs. It'll be interesting to see how he handles that workload.
Mr. Ginsburg.
I've got the Preds in six, and, you know, Shawnee just took the Preds in seven. I wouldn't be shocked at all if this series goes to seven games, because I think, you know, Dallas is a much better team than some people are giving them credit for. I mean, you're talking about a difference of 7 points here. Sure. So it's not like the Stars limped into the playoffs at all. They're a pretty good team. So I'll take the Preds in six.
I would agree with you. I'm going to echo your comment. I also have the Preds in six, but I think this is going to be a closer series than people are giving the Dallas Stars credit for. They've been very stingy all season long. There's no reason to think that they won't be stingy in the playoffs. And it's not like they're stingy because they don't have the offensive talent. All the players, the offensive players, have sort of sacrificed some of their goal-scoring numbers to buy into the team defense comment that Jim Montgomery, head coach of the Stars, has been preaching. And to me, that's a team that is, you know, that is really buying into what the coach is selling. And I think the trajectory is upward pointing for the Dallas Stars. But I do think that the Predators are going to take it in six games.
You know, just quickly here, Drew, I know we have to go to break here and then come back and preview our next series. But Jamie Benn, I mentioned it with Eric Duhacek.
He's had a lousy year.
He's had a lousy year. He's got to score some goals. I mean, he can't just score, you know, a goal. You know, if the Stars really want to have a chance at beating the Preds and going far into the playoffs, he's got to start putting the puck in the net, because Tyler Seguin's been doing it all year, but Jamie Benn has been really inconsistent. And this is talking to a guy who's a huge Jamie Benn guy, so a huge Benn fan. So, you know, he's going to be a key for them.
We did ask you for your comments about the Jets and the Blues series. We said, what will be the deciding factor in the playoff series between the Jets and the Blues? Send us your comments via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send them to us via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. Matt thinks that special teams is going to be the deciding factor. And Danny says that Patrick Laine is going to be the deciding factor. Quote, if he gets rolling, it won't be close. We want to hear more from you. Give it to us on Twitter and via text message. When we come back, we preview the Pacific Division series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our playoff preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.